Hello and welcome to Wattcast. My name is Roger Watson, and these podcasts are dedicated to readings of various articles that I've had published in newspapers and magazines. They reflect my views on politics, the pandemic, and current affairs. Thank you very much for listening. The past was a better place. This is a column that was published in the hard copy of Country Squire magazine on the 15th of March 2023, and I've linked the full version that's available on my Substack. As my body hurtles inexorably into the future with all that entails, my mind plunges uncontrollably back into the past, specifically to my upbringing in a village in rural northeast Scotland on Royal Deeside. In no particular order, I look back on a patchwork of memories which pleasantly haunts me. Onion Johnny's. One of the regular visitors to the village was Onion Johnny. This was a picaresque-looking man wearing a beret and on a bicycle who pedalled very slowly into the village, weighed down as he was by large bunches of onions. These were carried around his shoulders, over his handlebars and over the mudguards of the bicycle. I saw him several times over the years, and had no idea to whom he sold his onions or how far along Deeside he went. I only ever saw him going in one direction, up Deeside, but at some point he must have come back, perhaps without his onions. Onion Johnnies were a common sight in those days. They were poor Breton farmers who came to the United Kingdom in summer and stayed until winter, travelling around selling onions and garlic. Onion Johnnies were first recorded in Victorian times and continued across the country until the 1980s. Sikh salesman. The Onion Johnny posed no threat. He merely pedalled past, bothering nobody, and leaving a faint whiff of onions in his wake. But there were regular visitors to our village who put fear into the hearts of housewives, and caused us children, if one was sighted, to run back home to issue loud and breathless warnings. These were the Sikh door-to-door salesmen. In truth, these were magnificent men, tall, dark-skinned, with large beards and brightly coloured turbans on their heads, wearing smart suits. I have no idea how they made a living, as the attitude towards them was outright hostility. My mother prided herself in never buying anything. Even as a child, I could not understand why she bothered to answer the door, only to confront them and tell them to go away. They had the trick, once the door was opened, of inserting a foot inside to prevent it from closing. I well recall comical scenes with my mother shouldering the door closed, while the gentleman on the other side pushed back, all the while politely trying to convince her in a strange accent that she really did need some of what he was selling. As a child, if I encountered one of them on the street, they were invariably polite. Their courage in arriving unannounced and largely unwanted in a village in rural Aberdeenshire is hard to grasp. The only gays in the village, sex in the sense that Philip Larkin referred to it, had only just been invented, and homosexuality did not exist. I only found out decades later when meeting an old school friend that my long-suffering piano teacher of 6 years, a single man who lived with a landlady, had been homosexual. I don't think the word gay was used then. This elegant, immaculately dressed, pipe-smoking gentleman, also a teacher at my school, with his pencil moustache, may well have been gay. Nobody knew and nobody cared. Another character, latterly a minor celebrity on Grampian television, was more openly gay. He paraded the streets, colourfully dressed in his mincing walk, and spoke to everyone he met. Effeminate was the word that people used to describe him. He lived above the shop my father managed, so I saw him regularly. Again, people may have known about his sexuality, but again, nobody cared. Maud Outre was the local lesbian. She was single, with short-cropped hair, and her private car registration plate was prefixed Les. A few of us suspected, especially as we got older. Again, nobody cared. The Jewish tailor. In the village there was a tailor. He was a garrulous and pleasant man, who sat cross-legged on a raised dais at the rear of his shop, surrounded by reams of cloth, with needles in his mouth and threads of all colours hanging around him. There was nothing exceptional about the tailor except his name, Manny. It only struck me many years later that he had been Jewish, running into Manny in the street on his way to and from his shop, even as a small boy, was to end up in a long conversation about how you were, how was school, and how was the family. It takes a village to bring up a child, and Manny was one of the people I remember bringing me up. Manny's house was a regular venue on New Year's Eve, and his hospitality was generous. Cold and frosty mornings. It wasn't all fun and games. My father ran a shop, and we lived in the days of paraffin heaters, which meant he sold this evil potion. While barely heating your home, it caused rivulets of condensation to run down the gloss-painted walls which adorned most kitchens. Worse still, I had to help at the shop, which meant cycling there before school, to fill dozens of metal gallon paraffin containers from a 1,000-gallon tank behind the shop. Until you've had your hands covered in paraffin in sub-zero conditions, sapping the heat from your fingers, and try to recap a metal container with a wonky stopper, you have not experienced misery. Worse still, the smell of paraffin is indelible, and you had barely got rid of it from your hands before it was time to get up and do it all again. Other memories flood back, but I will spare the reader and my reputation. After all, collecting Robertson's Gollies and stealing apples are no longer the stuff of legends, but they were better days.
This podcast was produced in association with youthpublications.com.